CMC, I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined today once again by Anthony Bongiorno.
Hello, everyone. I'm back.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
How are you feeling? How are you doing?
I'm doing as good as anyone can in these times. How about you?
I'm dandy.
I'm excited about today's episode.
Me too.
I'm excited to talk about this book. Why don't you tell them what we're talking about?
Today we're going to talk about the Final Girl Support Group.
By Grady Hendrix.
Right. Which just came out this year, 2021. Only 1 year after his last book.
Which I have not read.
Which I have read.
And you really like that one, right?
Yeah. So I think here's how I want to structure it. I want to start with just a little brief talk about the final girl theory and where that term comes from. Mm-hmm. And then we'll go on to the book. And I want to talk about the book for at least a few minutes without spoilers before we dive right into the spoilers.
Okay.
And I guess a good way to start would be to talk about Grady Hendrix, the author. So Grady Hendrix, he had been around writing here and there for, I think, Playboy and he did little writing things all over. His wife is a chef and he helped her write a cookbook back in 2012 called Dirt Candy. His first novel was Horror Store, spelled as one word, from 2014. This was a sort of dark horror comedy about a haunted...
It was like a haunted IKEA.
Basically, it was a haunted IKEA. And the book itself was designed to look like an IKEA...
catalog.
And he's actually very good at, he really makes a lot out of the little interstitial like images and stuff in between chapters. His next book was My Best Friend's Exorcism from 2016. That was the first book I read of his.
Mine too.
And we read it at the same time and we both really liked it. That is it. The title kind of says it all. That is a book about two female friends, young friends that become lifelong friends, and one of them becomes possessed and nobody believes her, which is a theme that occurs a lot in Grady Hendrix's writing. Well, female friendship is a major theme in his writing, but also no one believes in the protagonist.
Also, just a touch of nostalgia.
Yes.
A lot of people know that book by its cover art because it looks like an 80s VHS tape.
Well, that was its paperback, which I think was more popular than its...
Really?
Yeah. Remember, the hardback was, it looked like a yearbook, but one of the girls' faces was
crossed out. Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's a big improvement then.
Yeah.
Because everybody I talk to knows the new cover. And they're always like, oh, I haven't read that book, but I know what you're talking about. It's cool looking.
Right. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. Well, it sort of thrives in paperback, I think, which leads to his next book, which is Paperbacks from Hell from 2017. And this is a nonfiction book. This is a bit of really, really fun criticism, but also...
It's kind of like a coffee table book.
Yeah, it's also like an art book.
Yeah.
And it's all about sort of schlocky genre paperbacks from the 70s and 80s and 90s even. And he'll begin every chapter with like a big book, like Jaws. And then
the Exorcist.
Yeah, and then all the bullshit that copied it. So you could see from that book that he really knows his shit when it comes to, like, the history of genre fiction.
Yeah, well, because there used to be a big market for, like, cheap paperbacks that were knockoffs of bestsellers.
Right.
So it'd be, like, a cheap... Like, I think the first chapter is he does starts at Rosemary's Baby, which was, like, a critical hit and a bestseller. And then, like, the million knockoff paperbacks about haunted children or possessed children or, you know, like, they're basically, like, knockoffs of Rosemary's Baby.
Exactly.
And he does that for all the big... You know, books in the genre.
Yeah. Then in 2018, he did We Sold Our Souls, which I did not read. This one kind of flew under my radar. I think I'm going to read it now just to sort of complete I want to have read all his books. I don't even know really what this one is about. I think it's about a rock band who sells their soul for fame.
That's what I was going to say. That's what it looks like it's about, but I could be wrong. But it's the cover, again, interesting cover art. The cover looks like the cover of a Rolling Stone magazine.
Well...
And Horror Store looks like an IKEA catalog.
Right.
Actually, this book is the only one that doesn't really have yet.
I bet its paperback will have something really
probably,
fun.
Like a fun kind of cover.
Right. I think one thing you could say about his overall, you know, project is a lot of his books feel like they're going to be simple satires because they seem to be based on one little contrivance. Like two teenage girls and one gets possessed.
Right.
Or a band sells their soul.
Or even haunted just a haunted IKEA. IKEA, yeah.
But it always ends up being, I think, deeper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, My Best Friend's Exorcism, the thing that sticks out to me when I think back on it, because it was years ago that I read it, is the friendship between the two girls.
Yeah.
And how it ends, spoiler alert, with like a flash forward way in mm-hmm. the future where they're both really old and one of them just dies and the other's holding the other's hand.
Yeah.
And the book began with them as little kids.
Yeah.
So that's the thing that sort of I remember.
He has a tendency to like reel in the reader based on this like kind of campy niche kind of concept.
Right.
But then he takes it very seriously.
Yeah.
He has a really good way of like keeping you hooked with fun stuff, but also like taking his characters seriously.
Yes.
And making you actually care about them.
Yes, absolutely. His next book was The Southern Book Club's Guide to Slaying Vampires from 2020. I have to say, I believe this is his best book.
I think it's his longest, right?
Yeah.
It looks pretty big. I haven't read it yet, but I want to.
It's incredible. And again, it's a simple idea, right? A book club of women.
Right.
You know, and they're Southern, so there's a lot of like...
It's
really
kind of like a
song.
Take on like Interview with the Vampire kind of literature, right?
Kinda. I mean...
Every one of his books has kind of like a genre or like a trope that it's like a play on.
Framed in.
Right, right.
But it's more than that.
It's always more than that, but like My Best Friend's Exorcism is kind of like... The Exorcist.
Right.
And then this is like slasher movies. And then like right. that seems like it's like vampire Southern vampire gothic.
Right. But it ends up being, I think, a lot like we were just talking about this, Ira Levin's work. Because it ends up being about how the men, the husbands, are all go into business with the vampire. So when
it's kind of like a Stepford Wives thing.
Right. So when the women are like, this guy's a vampire, they're like, oh, you know, you should stop going to that book club. It's filling your head with ideas.
Yeah.
And there is a point in that book where the girls break up and one of the main character, all the other girls don't like her. But then it turns around. I bring this up only because one of my criticisms for the book we're going to talk about today is I feel like the final girls don't like each other enough for me to have cared about them.
Okay, that's an interesting point. Also, the Final Girl Support Group and the Southern Vampires Book Club, it seems kind of like a two different takes on the same idea.
Yeah. And he wrote them, you know, or at least he published them a year apart.
I wonder if it started off as like one idea that cloned itself and turned into two different
Interesting.
Ones.
Interesting. I think that's possible.
Because I haven't read Southern Vampires... Whatever. What is it?
The Southern Book Club's Guide to Vampire Slaying.
Yeah. But it sounds like similar sort of to this.
There are certainly scenes of women sitting around discussing things. And the main woman is trying to blow a whistle. And the other women are like,
which is exactly
don't
what
do
this
it.
Is about.
Right. It's exactly what this is right. about. And so that brings us to the book we're talking about today, The Final Girl Support Group. Now, what would you give it on a scale from 1 to 5 stars?
Okay. So we briefly talked about this, but I didn't want to talk about this book too much because I wanted to save it for the pod.
Sure.
But I would say overall...
I refuse to speak to you without a microphone.
Overall, I would give it... even a family functions. It's very awkward.
Yeah.
I would give it a 3.5. Mm-hmm. But I think I'd give the first half a 5 and I'd give the second half a 2. And so it averages out to 3.5.
Very interesting.
I have a few criticisms of the book and we'll get there. But I do think it sort of falls apart in the third act.
Okay.
Say act because I do think that it was written to be cinematic.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
I have criticisms too, although I don't know if that's necessarily one of mine. I would give it a 4, but I was hovering around 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to rank his books of the ones I've read, well, first of all, let me be honest and say I remember so little of Horror Store. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I read it after Best Friend's Exorcism.
It's not as good. It's got first novel all over it.
Yeah. And much like I think one of the problems with this book is it doesn't achieve much more than its contrivance.
I agree.
I think the Southern Book Club Guide to Vampire Slaying is his best book. I think right below that is My Best Friend's Exorcism. And I think below that would be this book, Final Girl Support Group.
Okay.
Let me say that I like it. I had a lot of fun reading
it. Me too.
I read it very quickly. It's a very, he's a good page turner. Like,
yeah.
You read his shit so quickly.
You have so much fun reading his books.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you're not having fun, he's putting his characters in such dire situations that you can't put it down. Where you're literally like, oh, fuck, I gotta.
Yeah.
I can't sleep if I stop right
he's
now.
He's really good at writing sequences that are like action sequences that are written like cinematically.
Yeah.
So that you almost like feel like you're watching a movie in your head.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to pause right in the middle. I want to keep going. You know?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Because he does, all of his books are sort of, they're so heavily inspired and influenced by film and TV.
Sure.
That
yeah.
they're kind of like filmic in the way that they are.
Yeah.
Conceived in the way that they're written and every, you know, the whole nine.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I almost wonder why he doesn't write for the screen or for TV.
I think he has written some screenplays, but I don't know if any of them have ever been produced. It seems like he was bouncing around. Because he also like co-founded some film festival. He was bouncing around the world of literature and literati and whatever. And I think Horror Store hit, and then he kind of dedicated himself to that track of like, okay, now I'm going to do these quirky.
He's like a horror comedy writer. It's an interesting.
Right.
That's why he's so, I think, in such a short time, he's gotten the following that he has, because
right,
he's kind of like alone in his field.
He's also working fast.
Yeah, he's prolific.
Yeah.
Samantha Irby is a big fan of his.
Is that right?
Yeah. She actually, when this book first came out, she put it on her Instagram and the caption was like, he never misses.
Yeah.
It's always fun to see what writers like
that's
read,
what, I like about
what writers read. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I saw Jenny Lawson, someone you fucking hate. She gave it like 5 stars and she had a nice little blurb about it.
Yeah.
No, he doesn't ever miss. You know, it's one of these things where, because I love his work so much and I've read so much of it now, I have a lot of criticism of this book, but it's also one of the best novels I've read in a while.
Yeah, for sure.
It's hands down a recommend, a good book.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you really are into horror and slashers, which we both are.
Absolutely. It's just, if comparing it to his other phenomenal work, it's not the lowest, but it's not the highest.
Should we do like a synopsis before we just get into spoiler territory?
Yeah, but before I do that, I kind of want to just give a little brief, boring talk about what Final Girl Theory is.
Oh, sure. Yeah, go ahead.
So it's called the Final Girl Support Group. And the idea is that in horror movies, especially slasher movies like Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th,
Psycho is credited as being the first slasher movie, but it's actually Peeping Tom, isn't it?
You bet it is.
Yep.
You fucking bet it is.
And I knew that before it was, they said it in Scream 4 or whatever movie they said
right,
it
right.
in.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah. She says it in Scream 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, but everyone still gives the credit to
Psycho.
Psycho. Yeah, and so usually those films have female protagonists and a bunch of kids die. And as the series went on, or as the genre went on, it became more bloody, more exploitative, more about nudity and shit like that. And then there was always one girl who lived at the end.
And the movies got cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah. I believe it was Scream, actually, where Randy tells the rules of a horror movie,
mm-hmm.
where we first, the public consciousness first got to the idea of the final girl being virginal. Like, it mm-hmm. is true if you look at it, you look at in Halloween, Laurie Strode is babysitting the kid and actually playing with the kid and talking to the kid, where her friend is babysitting but fucking
yeah.
her boyfriend.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think,
and in Friday the 13th, that's the whole impetus for everything, is that the camp counselors were having sex when they should have been
watching
Jason.
And that's how Jason yeah. died. Right. So I think that part of the definition becomes solidified with Scream.
Yeah.
But I wanted to talk about its original definition, because it actually, like a lot of mainstream understanding of critical theory, it's sort of dumbed down. Like, we all talk about male gaze. You hear that all the time. It's in every, you know, it'll show up in things like
G-A-Z-E, not the male gaze.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
You know, and you'll see it all. You see it in a BuzzFeed list, like male gaze. But that's a much more complicated theory. So Final Girl actually is a critical theory. It comes from the book Men, Women, and Chainsaws by Carol J. Clover, which was published in 1992. So the term Final Girl comes from, goes at least back to 1992.
Now, is she feminist critic who's interested in horror movies?
Yes.
Okay. Makes sense.
Right. She's coming off of Laura Mulvey, who's the critic who comes up with the male gaze.
Yeah.
And it's basically the second wave feminist critics who are thinking about, well, number one, they're using psychoanalysis to get their points across. And two, they're thinking a lot about identification. So in this book, her basic question is, horror movies are made for mostly a male audience. Why are there female protagonists, and why is usually a female protagonist the one who lives at the end? How do young teenage boys identify with a female on screen?
Which is interesting, because if you look at like gothic novels, there is like the damsel in distress type character, but very often those are male protagonists. So like Frankenstein has a male protagonist,
right.
Dracula has a male protagonist. Like there is a shift that happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So in her theory, and this gets into psychoanalysis, so it's going to be really easy to roll your eyes, but I'm just trying to explain that it's more complicated than...
I'm already rolling my eyes.
That it's more complicated than we think of. I think Final Girl, the term is blown up in popularity. There's been movies called Final Girl.
And then there was a novel called The Final Girls.
Right.
Which was like similar to this, but like took itself way seriously and was like a thriller novel.
Right.
But I was talking to some friends about this book, and they were like, oh, you got to read that book. That book's good,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I've heard them. I've seen booktubers comparing them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's become almost synonymous with, like, Scream Queen.
Right.
Like you're the girl who's in these movies. And in her theory, the killer or the slasher represents childhood or a male character that's stunted. Like they're sexually stunted, like whether it be Norman Bates, which it's very obviously psychoanalytical, or Michael Myers, who basically stalled at childhood after he killed his sister, or Jason, who's basically a child, or Leatherface, who is nonverbal.
Right.
There's something sexual about it, but they're
prom night.
They
were all traumatized, or something happened to them when the killers were children.
Right. The killer represents stunted male sexuality. Okay, so...
Audience at home, Mike is opening up a textbook right now.
So I have a few quotes from her.
Go ahead.
Final Girl. The image of the distressed female most likely to linger in the memory is the image of the one who did not die, the survivor or final girl. She is the one who encounters mutilated bodies of her friends and perceives the full extent of the preceding horror and of her own peril, who is chased, cornered, wounded, whom we see scream, stagger, fall... rise and scream again. She is abject terror personified. If her friends knew they were about to die only seconds before the event, the final girl lives with the knowledge for long minutes or hours. She alone looks death in the face, but she alone also finds the strength to either stay the killer long enough to be rescued, A, or to kill him herself, B. Okay, so that's interesting because in this book, they make this deal of, no, you're not a final girl unless you kill your monster.
Right. And what's interesting, I was thinking while you were saying that, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, all the main character does is scream and run away. In the original Halloween, all she does is scream and run away. I think it wasn't until maybe Nightmare on Elm Street.
Right.
Where you got like the empowered final girl, and then that really got solidified again with Scream.
Right.
With Sydney. But for a lot of these early horror movies, it was the girl who just lived the longest.
Right.
And she was rescued by somebody else at the end.
Right. Which is what makes it so funny that in the book Final Girl Support Group,
they're militant.
Yeah. And the main character and the people will say the main character, you're not even a real final girl because you're just a survivor.
She was left for dead.
Right.
Right.
She played possum.
Right.
And they're all like, we killed our monsters, which is interesting deviation from her original idea of what a final girl is. It's interesting. This book, the version I have, actually both versions, the one that's out now and this original version, have Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw Massacre on the cover. But she spends a lot of the time thinking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Why?
Because in that movie, there's a famous scene where Leatherface corners the protagonist and puts the chainsaw between her legs.
Okay.
And it seems like he like ejaculates.
Okay.
And then in the end, she picks up the chainsaw.
Oh, right.
This is a big part of...
Yes, I remember that shot.
Right. This is a big part of Carol J. Clover's thing, is you take the killer's weapon to kill them. So again, going back to psychoanalysis, she suggests that the core of a slasher film is the story of male maturing. The male audience member identifies with the female protagonist because, and this is her speaking, the final girl is, quote, boyish, in a word. Just as the killer is not masculine, she is not fully feminine. What she's saying in very, and again, we could roll our eyes at this now, in these psychoanalytical terms, the teenage boys in the audience are identifying with the female characters because female, in a Freudian sense, is not yet male, okay?
Okay.
So when, you know, when you kill the killer, what happens?
You take his manhood.
Right, right.
This makes me think of two.
Or you take his phallus, and now you have a phallus. Think about in Scream the way when Sydney kills Billy, she puts her finger in his wound.
I was just going to reference that.
Yeah.
I was going to say it makes me think of two things. First of all, it makes me think of one thing that makes me disagree with that is there is like the ancient, I don't know if it's ancient, but it might be actually, or and certainly medieval trope of like death and the maiden.
Yeah.
Which is revisited a lot and a lot in Nightmare on Elm Street. I feel like Nightmare on Elm Street does a lot with these like classic tropes.
Yes, I agree.
But even things like where are you going, where have you been, like there are throwbacks to like throughout literature to like this idea of like death is coming for the young girl.
Yeah.
So in that way, that kind of goes against this idea because that is a very feminine girl.
Yeah.
But usually it ends with death taking her.
Interesting.
And it also makes me think of like when I used to teach Beowulf, when I taught like British lit, like Anglo-Saxon lit, there's a scene where Beowulf fights Grendel's mother. You familiar with Beowulf?
Yeah.
So Grendel's mother is like trying to dig her claws in between his chainmail. Mm-hmm. And then he ends up his sword doesn't work on her. So he ends up killing her with a giant's sword.
Okay.
So it's basically like he goes from a regular dick to a bigger dick.
Right.
And she's trying to penetrate him, but he ends up conquering her with the giant dick. Yeah. So, and then in Scream, like we talked about when we did the Scream episode, like she penetrates him by putting her finger in his wound.
Yeah.
Right before she kills him.
Right.
So it is like this struggle for who's going to be the penetrator between man and woman.
I think it's very, very easy. And I think not just easy, it's right, it's correct.
I mean, many times
forget about Freudian bullshit. But I do think there's something to phallocentrism.
Oh, yeah. Well, lots of ink has been spilled in lots of undergrad papers about everything we're talking about.
From Harry Potter getting his wand to King Arthur.
For sure, yeah.
Which is why, and here you go, fans.
And Grendel's mother, by the way, lives underwater in a cave.
Okay.
Which is like so sapphic. Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to make the ubiquitous Last Jedi reference for this episode. Of course, this is why Rey and Kylo Ren destroying Luke's lightsaber is the perfect symbol of destroying the phallic masculine toxicity power of the Skywalker family, but then J.J. Abrams ruined it and just made it put it together.
This house... It's like those, you know, those signs where it's like, in this house, Black Lives Matter, love is love.
Yeah.
I want to get that, but then add to it. And this house, the sequel stopped after
The Last Jedi. So this is the last thing I read to you from Carol J. Clover before we get into the real book. Figuratively seen, the final girl is a male surrogate in things edible, a homoerotic stand-in, the audience incorporate. To the extent she means girl at all is only for purposes of signifying male lack. And even that meaning is nullified in the final scenes. Our initial question, how to square a female victim hero with a largely male audience, is not so much answered as it is obviated in these readings. The final girl is, apparently, female, not despite the maleness of the audience, but precisely because of it. The discourse is wholly masculine. The females figure in it only insofar as they are read some aspect of male experience. To applaud the final girl as a feminist development, as such reviews of Aliens have done with Ripley, is in light of her figurative meaning. So this is very, very relying on Freud and the idea of lack and all that, and fallow and edible and all that shit.
I was gonna say, like, reading it, like, and hearing you read it, it's like it holds water, especially when you brought up Ripley, because I do think like Ripley becomes more of a hero the more masculine the character becomes, because Ripley, certainly Sigourney Weaver plays Ripley, is much more feminine in the first one than in the second one and the third one. But at the same time, I also, part of me is just like, I don't know if maybe when this was written in 1992 this held more water, but I think horror has changed since 1992. I don't know if this still holds up.
No, it even then she was selective.
This is pre-Scream, which is very important.
Right. Yeah, and I say this is published in 92, but it's probably based on essays earlier.
From the 80s.
Right, because this is academic work.
Right.
And
I wonder what her take on Scream would be.
Yeah, I haven't looked that up. But she's very selective in what she uses to write about because she's trying to make her theory work.
Right.
You know, like a lot of this stuff, same thing with male gaze. It's all really, really interesting, and it's a good starting point for thinking. But there's so many holes you could poke in it. One very simple hole you could poke in it was that, in fact, we found out that it's not an all male audience. That's a canard.
Right. Right.
I read a very simple essay a couple years ago looking back on 80s movies, and like it was very quantitative, and I don't know how they got these numbers, but they were like basically just proving no.
It wasn't just teenage boys.
Women watch these movies too.
Also, like,
so that general premise is flawed.
Right. You could also poke holes in it by saying like, well, in the original Friday the 13th, the killer was a woman.
Right.
You know, like... Scream right. 2, the killer's a woman. And in both of those movies, I think Scream 2 calls back to the original Friday the 13th. Right. It's a mother who is almost like Grendel's mother.
Right.
Like coming for the person who killed her son, who's a killer.
Right, exactly. Well, you had this time where, you know, you had like mainstream reviewers like Siskel and Ebert being really, really conservative and really, really hard on the genre.
And well, because it was like that 90s thing of like violence uptick among teenagers is because of horror movies.
Right, right. And I
think that's not what it was.
No, no.
And video games, they got lumped together.
Right, right. I think there's something very interesting about this kind of work. Anyway, let's get to the book, the real book in question, The Final Girl Support Group.
Let's bridge from that to this by saying that in this book, the definition of Final Girl seems to be, like you said, somebody who survived a horror. They all are supposed to have been based on true stories. And so they, in real life, they killed their killer.
Yes.
And so that's a final girl is the one who lived long enough and was fought hard enough to kill their killer or at least get their killer jailed or something.
Right. And in the weird alternative reality of this book, all of our main characters are based on major franchises.
Right.
With different names, but you know what they're talking about.
And in each case, their movie is based on something that happened to them. And then in some cases, even their sequel is based on something that happened to them later on.
Right. So it's like you still had the slasher movie era. But in this reality, it was based on true stories.
Right. So it was like Halloween is the Babysitter Murders and Nightmare on Elm Street is like the Dream King. And Scream is Stab, which is weird.
Because in Scream, they have the Stab movies.
That's the thing. Even in Scary Movie, like whenever you try to satirize Scream, it's hard. It's hard. It's like putting a hat on a hat. It's hard to satirize something that's already so meta.
Right, exactly.
And so that's why I think one of my criticisms, I think that Julia, the character based on Sydney, is one of the weakest final girls.
But I think it's interesting that she's the intellectual one.
She's like a feminist theorist.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It kind of is funny in a way.
Yeah.
Also, a lot of these characters are named after the actors who play them.
Yes.
And their doctor, Dr. Carroll, I believe is named after Carol J. Clover, the critic who came up with the Final Girl theory.
Okay, that actually does make a lot of sense. I was wondering. Texas Chainsaw Massacre is the Panhandle Meat Murders or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're funny names. Who's your favorite?
Of the girls?
Of the Final Girls. I have mine. I have my two favorites.
Huh.
Like, who I think was developed the best.
Oh, developed the best? I like Marilyn.
Me too. She's my favorite. I love that she was like a Texas Southern belle.
Right.
That, like, lived through this and then... Turned it into an industry and was like, I'm going to marry, like, a rich Republican and I'm going to be, like, an upper crust society lady. And I just love... I love the idea of thinking, like... where these women would be 30 years later.
Right.
Like the main character from Texas Chainsaw Massacre is like a Southern society woman.
Right. And Marilyn is the name of the Marilyn first name of Burns, the actress yeah. who was the star of
Well, the characters' names are Marilyn, who's named after Marilyn Burns, Heather, who's named after Heather Langenkamp.
And her backstory is the Nightmare on Elm Street one.
Which is so funny. She's one of my favorites too, because she's like, it's never quite explained what the Dream King is.
Right.
But then at the end, like, she does some weird, like, thing.
She falls asleep and ends up somewhere else.
And they're like, how'd you do that? And she's like, I told you I'm on some higher level shit, which is really funny.
It's funny, but I also, it almost broke the whole book for me.
It did. It's almost, it's kind of like a Deus Ex Machina. Like, wow, she really just, like, traveled through time and space because she fell asleep.
There is magic in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I guess she maintains that the killer, the person who was caught for her crime, she still maintains is not the real killer. The real killer. He existed in her dreams.
And it's also mentioned earlier, because you've got Chrissy, who is supposed to be
she's supposed to be someone from her thing is Gnome Coming in the book.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember
it's
what
like
her...
is it a Canadian horror movie?
I don't know. Her weird thing is that she is in a relationship with her killer.
So okay, here's my question. She's my favorite. She's my second favorite. I think she was the most interesting. Because I love the whole idea. She, like, kind of becomes the voice of, like, this.
Yeah.
Like, the theory where she's, like, she's kind of mystical and kind of weird, but she's also like, you don't understand. Like, they're just scared children.
Right.
And we are women and we can give birth, so they want to take life away.
But because...
And it's, like, really interesting.
Because these are real killers, she seems like a weird kook instead of, like, a film theorist.
Right. And now, was Keith the person who was going to kill her?
Yes.
Because I wasn't sure. Yeah, it was alluded
Lynette says
to.
She married her monster.
Okay. I didn't. That makes it even more interesting. Because she said that she sold out. And then there was Keith. And I was like, is that supposed to be the same guy? Or is she just like hitched up with another guy who's like that?
No, it's the same guy, I believe.
That's really interesting. Right. I thought she had that whole scene where she walked her through her museum was so interesting to me.
And that's the first, what I was going to say was that's the first indication of the Dream King being a weird thing, because when they're in Heather's room, they don't even describe what
she
sees.
It's all mirrors. Yeah.
No.
Julia's is all mirrors because it's meta.
Right. Heather's room, Lynette doesn't even describe it. She just says what I've seen is, you know,
I can't even describe how horrible it was.
Right, and Chrissy says, do you like it? The Dream King actually did this installation. I spoke to him. So that's the first implication that the Dream King's a real being.
What did you think it was? I pictured it as the scene where Tina is like dragged across the ceiling in Nightmare on Elm Street. Or something where like all the blood was coming out of the bed.
Like Johnny Depp.
Like something really like not just slasher, but like Nightmare on Elm Street-y.
Right. Oh, you know, I kind of pictured it as hell. But I think your reading makes so much more sense, because Lynette says something that
other slashers don't have.
Right. And Lynette says something like, seeing this makes me have more respect for Heather or something.
Right. That she survived through this.
Yeah. But my Heather, for me as a character,
well, her thing
annoys
is like,
me
she's a drug
she's,
addict.
Yeah.
And she's just always trying to make a buck to survive.
And she's a turncoat.
Yeah.
And she's always on the protagonist's case.
Yes. Which is, it's interesting to have one of them go down that road of like, she was so traumatized, she turned to, you know, drugs and she had addiction issues.
It is interesting that they all go in different places.
Yeah.
Danny,
who's based on Jamie Lee Curtis, is based on Laurie.
Right.
But is named after, we think, Danielle Harris.
Right.
Because we were saying that we think that certain names would be too...
Right, she couldn't be called Jamie Lee.
She wouldn't be Jamie Lee because it'd be way too... And Nev, you couldn't call her Nev. So she named her Julia after her character on Party of Five.
Which I think is brilliant.
Yeah, because it'd be too distracting. It would take you out of it. So Danny is based on Jamie Lee, and she's interesting because she becomes like similar to the protagonist, sort of like a militant, sort of like a hide away from the world type.
Which is
interesting because it's kind of like the way the Laurie character is in the new Halloween movies.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. And she's in a relationship, and her relationship seems to be the big crux of her life.
I love that scene where they take her partner from the hospice and try to bring her home.
Yes.
Because there's just so much good stuff in that scene about what death is supposed to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And like, death is supposed to look like illness and decay and age. Yeah. It's not supposed to look like a teenager getting butchered.
Yes, yes.
I just thought it was, at first I was like, this seems so out of place, but then it all kind of clicked and I was like, oh, this is really interesting.
Even when I'm having problems with the characters, his writing is just good writer.
Yeah.
A lot of the best lines and stuff is just, you know, in a monologue in our protagonist's head.
Right.
Our protagonist is Lynette, who I believe is named after Linnea Quigley, who played the victim in Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Which is so weird because that's such a like B movie. to be the protagonist, but that's why.
But she's not the I watched it today.
She's not the protagonist.
No, she's in one scene.
But what's interesting is that's why then all the other ones are like, you're not even a real final girl.
Right, right, right.
And she's not even from a big franchise.
And in that franchise, and in that movie, she doesn't survive.
Right.
She just, she's killed the same way. She's put on
the antlers of a moose head.
But I watched that film today. It's weird because it's all from the point of view of the killer. Like it's the, like, and it, he doesn't start killing until an hour into it.
I've never seen that movie.
It's better than I thought it was going to be, but still pretty awful. and then we have the character that we don't see only in flashback or as she mystically comes at the end, Adriana, who is...
based on Adrian, who is the actress in Friday the 13th.
Right, who also does the audiobook for this
which
book.
Is so brilliant, yeah.
Right, he got the protagonist from Friday the 13th.
And I love that it was supposed to be in real life, she was black, but they made her white for the movie.
Right, right. And her story is Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
But she's very interesting because she's supposed to have been the best of them and the kindest of them.
A humanitarian, yeah.
And she actually bought the camp that the murders happened at and made it into like a place for victims of abuse and, you know, for women who have been victimized.
And then she gets killed in the way that the character gets killed in Friday the 13th Part 2.
Yes.
Where she opens up her fridge and sees the mother's head.
Yes.
And is killed by the son.
Right.
So there are so many nods to the slasher movies that are so interesting.
So this is a question I wrote down. If you were not familiar with any of this stuff, would this book still be entertaining?
I was thinking that. I don't think it would be as entertaining.
Yeah.
I don't. I think you really need to be a fan.
I agree.
To appreciate all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see.
And then did we talk about all the final? Is that all the final girls?
Yeah. Danny, Julia.
Oh, and then the new final girl.
Stephanie.
Right.
Right. Right. All right. Before we get into spoilers, I just want to say one thing I really like about this book is Grady Hendrix is really, really good at spoon feeding you information as it goes along. We're dropped in media res. And as it goes on, we learn the backstories of every character. He's just very good at it's. There are no like huge exposition dumps.
No.
It's really well weaved into the narrative.
Yeah. Yes, like even the whole like Lynette's backstory.
Yeah,
you find out she has scars.
Right.
Then you find out something about antlers. Then you it's like piecemeal. Right. When you find it out all at once, it's like, oh, this is cool.
Right.
This makes sense.
You have another character, so you're not even a real final girl, and you, the reader, like, what does that mean?
Right. And then even that's a spoiler. I don't want to bring that up, but okay. Yeah, there are things that don't come out in these big dumps. It's very calculated and slow.
Right.
And he's really good with that.
So something that haunted me over the last week was you said to me...
I know. I knew this was going
to
drive
you crazy.
That
there was a major thing in your head or a major critique or I forget how you put it. And I kept thinking, what was that thing?
Mm-hmm. So, you couldn't figure it out?
Well, I have a few major things in my head.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's the same that
All right.
you have.
Well, it's a spoiler, so...
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, so here's major spoiler.
Spoiler time.
Spoiler time, everyone. I knew Stephanie was the killer from the beginning.
Okay, I did not.
Okay, and here's why. I'm going to show it to you, and then you're not going to be able to unsee it.
Okay.
I don't know why he did this, because I can't be the only person who caught this.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just too much of a tell right away.
Uh-huh.
The very first page is a chat between two people on Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
About how all the final girls need to disappear. And the person's name is Fubargate.
Uh-huh.
Fugate.
Yeah, yeah,
And then literally a page later, they introduce Stephanie Fugate.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, she's the killer. That's her.
That's so
And then I was like, reading it as
Why
if that was...
Why did I not catch that?
Reading it as if it was... And he tries to throw it off.
Right. Her name there's, is a, there's a couple of
Her name is Fugate, Fugate.
Right.
So he has her name be... Fubargate.
Yeah.
But I immediately was like, oh, her name must be Fugate, and she put in bar as a joke. And then literally two pages later, they introduced Stephanie Fugate.
Wow.
So I was like, I was reading it as like, oh, we're supposed to know that this is her.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, wait, am I not supposed to know this is her?
No, you're not.
And then when she was revealed as the killer, I was like, oh, I guess like I wasn't supposed to know this.
Wow. Okay. Fascinating. No, that's...
So that's my huge complaint is
that is a huge complaint.
I just was like, oh, this
Although
is her.
I was dumb enough to not catch it.
Well, that's good. You probably enjoyed it more for that reason.
Right, because in the first page, I thought, oh, it's got to be Dr. Carroll. And then Dr. Carroll becomes the big
red herring. Yeah.
And throughout, you think it is her and isn't her. And then you think it's her son.
Right.
And then when Stephanie reveals herself to be the killer, you're like, oh, it is Stephanie. But then you realize the son is also still there. Right. There's a Billy Stu situation.
It's very Scream 4.
Yes, yes.
Very, very Scream
4.
But
I like that they bring gender into it. Because it's like, yes, the Billy Stu situation. But Lynette's like, he's going to take all the credit for it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This isn't about you. This is going to be about him.
Right. It almost made me wish that Sydney would have done that in Scream 4.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Although she does have some moments like that.
Yeah.
My major problem.
So that was when I said it was a fundamental problem with the way the book was written.
Yeah.
Where I was just like, this is why wouldn't you just like hide it a little bit better?
Right, 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 right. My major problem with the way the book is written is that it's not a horror.
It's not. It's action.
It's action mystery.
Yeah.
Based on a horror genre. And you know what?
No one is really killed.
Right. And because of the whole final girlness of it all, it took me half the book to realize it. It was like, it was gnawing at the back of my head, like, what is wrong here? What is missing
here? It's not a thriller.
And then I realized this isn't scary. And his other books have scary sequences.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this book doesn't. You know, one murders we actually see happens through a gun through a window.
Yes.
So it's not a knife. It's not suspenseful.
And then in the end, it's like somebody's run over by a car.
Right.
Yeah, it's very action-y.
Right. I'm not necessarily saying that it's bad, but it's weird. It's weird that this is based on slashes because there's sequences of horror in his other books.
In the flashbacks, it feels like sequences of like horror, like slasher.
Right, when they're talking about...
I guess he was going for like these women have grown up to be like Ripley's.
I guess.
Like action heroes.
Well, I like that there was a mystery because that's very Scream.
Yeah.
Right? You're like, who's doing this? But I wish there had been more. Other than like that one scene with Keith where she goes to see Chrissy and Keith kind of like attacks her.
Yeah.
There's not really horror.
Right. What did you think of the reveal that she wrote the book? I didn't totally buy it because I was just like, after half the book of her being like so like I'm never gonna ever show myself and bare my soul to the world ever again.
Yeah.
And then it was like, but I wrote a whole book on a computer that somebody hacked.
It felt like
true to the character.
I felt like as I was reading as you were writing it, like you came up, you got to this point and you made, you know.
Because in the, we should explain, I guess, for anyone who's still listening who hasn't read the book, in the book, there is a book called The Final Girl Support Group that the killer releases, and it's in it, they talk a bunch of smack about all the final girls, so they all turn on Lynette because Lynette's the one that wrote it.
And Lynette wrote it, but she says she didn't want to put it out.
She said she wrote it like as a therapy, like therapeutically. She just wrote it.
We haven't.
Although she did say that there was originally a plan to get it published.
Right.
Yeah, there's some backstory there.
Yeah. We haven't talked really about Lynette, who's the protagonist. She's an interesting character because of all of the women, she is the most trapped in the past. Mm-hmm. She's completely paranoid. She has no friends. Her best friend is her plant that she calls Fine because it means final plant, which I actually found funny and endearing that her own, because when she leaves the plant, she's like, oh, I left him.
Oh, she, we should also say that the central conceit is that they met with a therapist, Dr. Carroll, every week for years to talk about it. And then the book starts with the group breaking up.
Right. Being like,
we need to get over this, you know, and Lynette is holding on and the other ones are kind of ready to let it go.
Right. Lynette is like, oh, Heather's a drug addict. We do this for her. And then Heather's like, I thought we were all pretty clear that we're here for you.
Yeah.
And they're like, where's Adrian? Adrian's late. She's never late. And then you find out that Adrian died.
Right.
And that's sort of the inciting incident.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess another major flaw I have, or something that just bugged me, was that the final girls, it takes so long for them to be together. Like, the first scene, they're breaking up, and that's okay. But then every interaction Lynette has with one of the girls, they're just shit all over her.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like Grady Hendrix is so good at writing female friendship. Like, the thing that makes the Southern Books Club Guide to Vampire Slaying work is this. There are moments where the women turn against each other inside with their husbands and logic. But there are moments where it's like, you know what? I believe you and he is a vampire and we have to do something. And that, you feel that so much. And I kept, especially with Heather, I kept being like, come on, like each other. Like, I want to root for you more.
Right.
And I would be rooting for you more if you were... Right, if you were liking each other.
It's a lot of women stabbing each other in the back, which is a trope that's tired.
Yeah.
And then even with Stephanie, she ends up opening up to Stephanie and taking her in as like under her wing, and then Stephanie ends up being the killer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot of like women coming after other women.
Right. I also
And not being there for other women.
Stephanie's reason for doing it, I felt was a little Scream 4, a little...
It felt like... That's why I said that I felt like the third act, so to speak, fell apart, because I felt like it just became a copy of Scream 4.
Yeah. We find she... Lynette goes, you know, through the whole book, and we're jumping all around, but through the whole book, it's sort of an odyssey. It only takes place over a week.
Right.
After Adrian is killed, Lynette goes back to her apartment. We learn about her life. Julia shows up with this reporter. They're attacked. She runs away. She realizes they're all under attack, that somebody's trying to kill them all. She tries to convince some of the other girls. They don't believe her. She goes to Dr. Carroll's house. She goes on this odyssey.
She gets weirdly close / attracted to Dr. Carroll's son.
Yes. Yes, yes.
Which is interesting. I don't know. I don't know what that was. Was that meant to be a misdirect?
I don't know.
You think that she's going to hook up with him, but then so that's what throws you off his scent.
I never thought they
killer.
Were going to hook up. I just thought
there's definitely
that she
sexual
was...
tension in those scenes where they're together.
Is. Yeah.
But
And there's the weird character of the cop who saved her and the weird relationship she had with him.
Yeah.
And how she fucked him, and like that was all very odd. There's a whole harrowing sequence where she's in jail and the police are like abusing her because they think she's a cop killer. So it's an odyssey. And then in the end, it's like she realizes like, oh, the killer is Sky, the son of Dr. Carroll. Because she thinks it's Dr. Carroll for most of it. And then she realizes, no, it's the son, Sky. And then she's like, well, we got to go to the camp. All the women are at the camp because she told them to run away and be safe. Don't be with Dr. Carroll. And then they go to the camp. And you knew it was coming because you read it in the first page. I was shocked. I'm a fool. They're at the camp, and then she says something like, I was hit in the head with a sledgehammer, which is Stephanie, the character, shoots her in the head. We haven't really explained Stephanie.
She's supposed to be like the newest final girl.
She was at the camp.
She was the killer, it turns out. But she's supposed to be very much like Emma Roberts in Scream 4. Right. She like positions herself to be like the new ingenue survivor final girl.
Right, right, right.
But she's really behind it.
And that's why Lynette, our protagonist, goes to quote unquote kidnaps her, because she thinks, well, she's young. She hasn't lived this final girl life long enough. Mm-hmm. I have to protect her. So she's like the new young final girl that it's just happened to.
Prior to her, the newest one was Julia, who's the Nev Campbell from the 90s. Yeah.
But then she's the killer, and she shoots her in the head, and it gets wild. But then there's a lot of like shooting.
And then going back to like male Oedipal shit, like Sky is the killer partially because his mother never paid enough attention to him as a kid.
Right, because she was
devoted to the final girl, helping the final girl.
Yeah, it's
very like mommy Oedipal stuff that just seems a little tired.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
You know? Yeah. It's like Stu. That was Stu's thing in Scream.
That was Billy's thing.
Billy, that's what I mean. Yeah. Billy's thing was like, my mother left because of your mother or whatever.
Yeah, my problem with this book is like all his other books... Right, there's this surface level that he's playing with that's usually part of the title. It's this fun conceit. It's the book cover. It's a final girl support group. But then his writing usually will elevate us over the surface.
Right.
But this book, it takes off a few times, but it never really reaches the heights. I kept feeling like maybe he should have wrote this longer. Maybe he should have edited it more.
Right.
It doesn't get there.
Right. And I agree with you that I think that I still liked it a lot.
Right. Me too.
And this might be like, if this were the first book of his we'd read, we might like it better. But in comparison to other stuff, it seems like it minor work from him.
It's one of these things, you know, and this happens to all artists. Like after you've made something amazing, you might then, it feels like a step backwards.
Right.
This felt like a step backwards after his last book.
Yeah.
Because I felt his last book did transcend its silly idea of a book club and vampires.
What's interesting, though, is I feel like just based on what I'm seeing, this book is going to be the one that brings in people who've never read him before more than ever.
Yeah.
I feel like this has a lot of mainstream appeal.
I agree.
And I feel like a lot of people who haven't read his stuff before are picking up this book first.
There's been deals and stuff. They've been trying to make some of his stuff into...
Well, this was optioned by Charlize Theron, which...
She wants to play Lynette.
I think she wants to play Lynette. Yeah, which is goes with her... Like
I think
of like her and Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah,
and stuff.
I think she'd be good as Lynette.
Yeah,
interesting. But she wants to do it as a show.
I think she wants to do it as a series. But that's just because movies are dead now.
I know, but it feels like of all his books, this should be,
because it's based on slasher movies
and it's only a week long. Whereas like the Southern Book Club's Guide to Vampires, like, that takes place over 10 years. Like,
yeah.
There's, like, a five-year break in the middle of it, and, you know, like, that would be a great show. Yeah. Like, I don't I mean,
it could be a limited. It could be a limited series, like, six episodes or something. We'll see what happens with it. That's just early stuff yet.
Yeah.
Things change. But, yeah, it'll if that does happen, it'll be the first of his things to be actually adapted.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think it would be hard. I think something would be lost in translation in adapting, like, My Best Friend's Exorcism or something.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know why. I can't put my finger quite on why, but I do feel like something would be lost.
Well, I think a lot of the heart emerges in monologue, in what makes a novel different from a film.
Yeah, that's a good point. I also think it's like the heart is like takes you by surprise because you pick it up thinking it's going to be one thing and then it's something else.
Right. And it'd be easy for a director to fucking lose that.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. So there's a lot of twists and turns in this. One of the turns that happens is, so Lynette, the main girl, her story is based on Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Yeah.
And they even bring in Silent Night, Deadly Night 2, where it's the younger brother of the killer of the first movie.
Yeah.
Which brings up another problem I have, which is like, sometimes it's too meta, where it's like, she'll be like, then our sequel. And it's like, why would you talk that way?
Right.
Why would you refer to a sequel in your real life?
Also, there's a thing where like they go through all the movies.
Yeah.
And I feel like, why doesn't each one of these have like 20 sequels like all the real ones do?
Well, some do. Marilyn's does, but she became the producer of her own.
Oh, movies. Right. Some do, but like I think Babysitter Murders is just 1 and 2, and then
that is interesting. Yeah,
and then Babysitter Murders is interesting because she refers to it as her brother, but now in the Halloween canon, Laurie's not his sister anymore.
But it's a question in Danny's head whether or not it really was her brother.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, was this book too clever for its own good?
It's funny. I feel like talking about this book reminds me of the way like critics first reacted to Scream.
Okay.
Where they were like, remember Siskel and Ebert when they reviewed Scream 1?
Yes.
I think Ebert gave it a thumbs up, but Siskel gave it a thumbs down because he said like it's wanted to be clever, but it ended up being what the other ones were.
Right.
Similarly, I don't think this is quite the same, but it's like it didn't quite live up to the fun of the conceit, the original conceit of like, oh, this is going to be really fun. And it's going to be lots of nods to horror movies and stuff. It's almost not enough of that.
Yeah. Well, I think this book could have been scarier. It could have been funnier. Or it could have been more sincere.
Yeah.
It needed to be more of some direction.
Because
there were moments of comedy that I thought were actually very funny. And it's like, okay, well, why aren't there more jokes like that all over it? Because there'll be like a joke in it.
The part where Chrissy, where she was like, you're fucking nuts. Like, she just kept being like, okay, Chrissy, you're crazy.
Yeah.
That stuff was funny. I don't know why. Do you picture actors in your head when you read books? I pictured Chrissy as Kristen Chenoweth. And I don't know why, but I feel like she'd be great in that role.
That's interesting.
Because she's got like the baby voice thing. And like, I just feel like she'd be really good.
That's funny.
Because I knew about Theron, I pictured her the whole time.
I pictured the protagonist from Friday the 13th.
Oh, okay.
But then halfway through, I learned about Linnea Quigley and I started picturing Linnea Quigley.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, if you don't know, there's a documentary called In Search of Darkness. And then it's a 4-hour documentary on 80s horror movies.
That is so funny.
And then there's In Search of Darkness 2, another 4 hours. And that one gets into Linnea Quigley. And she's somebody that I didn't know about. She's in Return of the Living Dead. She's in Silent Night, Deadly Night. She's in Hollywood Hooker Chainsaw. She's been in a bunch of B movies. She was never the final girl. She was always the bad girl. She would always get possessed. She would always, you know, end up. She was naked in every one of her movies.
That's interesting.
She even did Linnea Quigley's horror. What does she call it? It's like she did a VHS called Linnea Quigley's Horror Workout, where it's just like when those were really big, like the workout videos. But it's like her and like there's a killer. So she's a really interesting character.
I like the interstitials between chapters in this book a lot.
Yes, me too.
It'll be lots of different things. So like the first one is like a letter or like from the notes of Dr. Carroll.
Yes.
And it basically like is like a snap personality portrait of each one of them.
Yeah.
But then there's like little ones like I liked this one from Time. It's supposed to be from Time Magazine 1998. The Final Girls Are Back. And it reminded me a lot of like Scream.
Yeah.
And like when Scream brought the slasher back, because it's like it says, welcome to the Final Girl Revival. These women became famous in the 80s.
Right.
It's just really interesting where it's like Julia Campbell says, it's not how I want to be defined. I did what anyone might do. My killer and I had a disagreement. He wanted my life to end and I disagreed. Mm-hmm. It's just like, it's just funny that it's like,
no,
in the
90s, about...
it's like, oh, the final girls are back. Like they had a comeback for a little while in the 90s. Right.
You learn a lot about the world in those little interstitial things. Yeah. He's very good at using them.
Yeah, he is. There's a few others that are really good. But
because some of them in the past, I mean, some of them are like, some of them are like police reports, like them questioning the girls right after.
Right. And then some of them are like clearly supposed to be like nods to that book and like all the theory that's been written. Trans-
right, right.
You, where they, it's like articles about by it feminist like films. Theorists. Yeah, yeah.
So I guess you said you'd give the first half of the book 5 stars. Well, the first 2 acts.
I think that, I mean, I feel like I was really, really like liking it a lot. And then... I don't know if it was toward the middle or the last third where I kind of felt like its problems were becoming more apparent.
Yeah.
And then the ending I felt was just too predictable because I already had this notion that turned out to be true.
Right.
And then also it just felt kind of like I said before, like derivative of like Scream, what Scream has already done.
Right. I agree. What do you feel about the end, the very end? Because I was wondering, because you know that they're setting something up. And it took me a while to get what it was they were doing. They're back together and they're talking. They're being very polite to one another. But they're in a jail. And you're like, why are they in a jail?
Oh, right.
And then they bring Stephanie out, the killer of this book. Stephanie's now, they give her like 3 life sentences. Right.
But they're like, want to reform her.
Right.
Instead of killing her.
Right. She's there and she's like rolling her eyes at them and whatever. And then Lynette says... Okay, she says, like, welcome to the final girl support group.
Right.
Like, they, instead of turning her into victim, they're like, even though you were the killer, we're going to see you as a victim. Because in some way she is.
Right.
She's a victim of Sky, the boy.
Right, right. And it's also like, there's, after Lynette kills someone, and she has this moment where she's like, I don't want to kill ever again. Even if it's somebody trying to kill me, I don't want to kill them.
Right. See, there's a cool thing that happens where, there's a truth that transcends genre tropes.
Yeah.
Realizing I'm not going to kill you.
Right.
Like, that's what a final girl is supposed to do, but I don't want to do death anymore.
Right.
Let's stop that cycle.
Yeah.
And ending with embracing her instead of killing her or whatever, I think was really, I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah. I like the last page a lot. He's very good at ending books.
Yeah.
His last, you know, ever wonder what happens to those final girls, and then it ends with, I know what happens to those girls. They turn into women and they live. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
I like the play on like, we were girls, but now we're women.
Right.
Kind of a thing. Which is something that I wish, and maybe they'll do it in the next one. I feel like there was some play here with the fact that like some of these girls they grow into women and now it's like they're too old to be cared about anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like something that I wanted to see out of the new Halloween movies. Where like I wanted there to be a moment where like Michael Myers like walks right by Jamie Lee Curtis.
Wow,
and it's like,
oh,
like you think he's coming for you, but he was only coming for young girls and he's not interested in you anymore.
Right.
Like that. And I think that would be an interesting like thing.
Right. That would make sense, especially because they remove the canon of her being.
Right.
So it makes no sense that he would focus on her.
And
so
then
much.
It would be perfect because now it's like, well, now I can stalk him and kill him because he's not coming after me anymore.
Right. I didn't like that first one, but there's 2 more in this supposed trilogy, and I'm open to it getting better. It seems like this next one, Halloween Kills, has some interesting ideas that I have not seen in a slasher movie or a horror movie.
Yeah, apparently it's supposed to be about like people from the town of Haddonfield getting together and being like, let's just all get together and kill them.
Yeah, like it's a mob.
Nightmare on Elm Street, like the way Freddy was killed in real life.
Or Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I really like that idea. Let's see if it goes somewhere interesting. So there are a couple of diversions. At one point, Lynette is arrested and they find these letters and they find out that part of her story that she never told anybody was that she was, as a kid, pen pals with with the person who ended up being her killer. And she never told anybody. And now that this has come out, they think she was in on it, that she convinced him to kill her father because her father was an asshole. And the killer writes a new letter that wasn't actually there where he says that they fucked. They never really had sex. They were just pen pals.
Well, that's what we find out about Chrissy because she says, like, I would never do that like Chrissy did.
Right, exactly.
Makes sense. I didn't fully put that together, but yeah.
Right. So And in that, we meet the detective that, like, saved her life and then, like, fucked her when she was, like, 18 and he was, like, in his 40s or whatever. And he's kind of an asshole to her.
But then he ends up doing a really good thing.
Right, right.
Unexpectedly.
It's an interesting turn because that whole part of the book was hard to read. It's very harrowing. It's like...
Yeah.
Everyone's against her. She's like stuck in a cell. The because they think that she was in on it, now they think she's a cop killer and they think she spent her whole life making herself a victim. So they're treating her really terribly. The police are treating her terribly. They're dressing up like Santa Claus to fuck with her.
Yeah.
They're like torturing her and it's very hard to do. And then the cop, the guy, the cop that's with her whole life.
He's like a sheriff-y type.
Right.
He reminded me of like the sheriff dad from Halloween or something.
I saw him as what's his name? The protagonist from Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. You know that guy?
That was a fun joke. Where she was like, oh, Babysitter Murders 3 took a weird turn. And
let's
not talk about it.
Yeah. He takes her and he's like, I'm driving you back to L.A., and you think, and he's talking about how like he's mad at her and how he loved her dad and she didn't like that she wrote all this bad shit about her dad. And he stops the car and you think he's going to just murder her. And this is all really hard because we found out now that she's being re-victimized by all of these people. Her tragedy is being turned against her. This man exploited her.
Right.
Sexually and for her tragedy because he was the person who he made her do interviews. He made her write books. He saw money to be made off of her story. So we think he's going to kill her and then he lets her free. He's right. Like,
he's like, I did this all on purpose. Make it look like you stole my car.
Right, right. And, he's and like, go. Which is, it's as you're reading it, it's a huge relief.
Yeah, it is.
Especially because he's like.
It's like, oh, you're not a monster.
Right. And it's also because, and this is, this happens a lot in his last book. You have that moment where the person's like, I believe you.
Right.
Where he's like, you're right. Something fishy's up. There's no way this is all happening and it's not all related. So he lets her go. And then she's like, he's like, punch me in the face. So people think that, you know, you know, we put up a fight. And then she like kicks him hard in the balls twice to get him back. And then she has a good thing at the end.
And she takes his car, which is funny.
And in the end, he thinks that they like made a deal because she said like, you know, he said, I'll help you if you write a book with me. And she's like, sure. And then at the end, he's like, what about our book? And she's like, I lied. I'm not writing a book with you. And then he's mad. So she gets her revenge.
Yeah.
You know. The theme, one of the big themes here, which is in some of his other books.
Is men preying on women.
Is men preying on women. And not only that, but re-victimization of women. You know, all of these women, their thing happened years ago, but their victimization doesn't stop. They're exploited by reporters. They're exploited by film studios. They're exploited by fans who stalk them.
Right.
The cops. Like, you just never stop being a victim.
Right.
It says something about, you know, the sort of toxic patriarchal culture. Mm-hmm.
Which I think is why it's so smart for them to say, like, we're going to take in Stephanie rather than.
Right, exactly.
Forget about her.
Right, exactly. And that's something Scream never did. Scream never gets into the gender politics of it.
I wonder if 5 will.
I have no idea.
Now it's a different time, you know?
It's also the first one not directed by Wes Craven.
Who's it going to be directed by?
Oh, I don't remember.
And it's just going to be called Scream.
Scream, get it? Yeah. That's another weird thing about that series is at some point you lose your meta cleverness if you make a million more.
Right, because it's like how many times is somebody gonna?
Right. Although, speaking of Scream, I like how you know, in the end of every Scream movie, Neve Campbell kills the killer.
Right.
So by Scream 5, she's killed what, 1,000 people?
Yeah.
So I do like in this. There's a scene where Stephanie is being captured by Keith and Chrissy, and Chrissy's like, you better run away because he's going to kill her. And this is before she knows Stephanie's the killer. So she's like, I'm going to save her. And she drives into their little ramshackle house, and Chrissy dies. And she's mortified by the fact that she killed Chrissy. Even though Chrissy is this terrible person, she's a turncoat. She's got this weird relationship with her killer. She's like, I killed somebody. Somebody died because of me.
That's the moment I was talking about before, where she's like, I'm tired of death. Like, I don't want to kill anyone ever again. And then she even says something along the lines of like, even if it's to stop someone from killing me, I don't want to kill them.
Right. It's a big moment
for
the character. And then it ends up being a very big clue that Stephanie's a killer because Stephanie's like, sometimes you got to kill people.
Yeah.
But I guess I really was a sucker for it. When Stephanie shoots her at the end, I was like, whoa. Holy shit. Yeah.
Oh, I love the chapter titles.
Yes.
They're really fun.
Because they're all based on like horror movie subtitles.
Yeah.
And I loved how
some of them don't make any sense. Like the Final Girl Support. It's like the chapter one is called Final Girl Support Group. And then everyone after that is like Final Girl Support Group 2. Final Girl Support Group 3D. And then it's like, and then one of them is like Final Girl Support Group Dream Warriors.
Yeah, yeah,
it just
yeah.
like doesn't make any sense.
But I loved how like three chapters from the end, it was called Final Girl Support Group, the last chapter.
Yeah.
Making a reference to the fact that I think the fourth Friday the 13th movie was called The Final Chapter. And then
the
just
next
came
one was called
again.
Like A New Chapter. Yeah.
New Blood, which I think they named the next chapter in this. So yeah, there's so much fun stuff in there.
And then isn't there like a reboot too, like a take on reboots?
Oh yeah,
too?
I think so. Yeah.
I wish she got into that more because she mentions reboots.
Yeah.
But not, they don't go down that path.
Yeah.
Or he doesn't.
Yeah. In the end, I would recommend this book. I do give it 4 stars because I think Brady Hendrix's writing is really, really good. He has a smooth hand.
Mm-hmm.
You never feel bogged down.
For sure.
This is the definition of a page turner.
All of his books are. I feel like all of his books tend to go in directions you don't think they're going to go in.
Which when you look at
The last chapter is Final Girl Support Group 24, A New Beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at like his nonfiction book, Paperbacks from Hell, he clearly understands paperbacks, right?
Right.
He's like a paperback writer, even though his books don't immediately go to paperback.
Right.
He makes these little fun books, and I think there's something to that.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like we've criticized it, but that being said, I really did enjoy it a lot, and I really couldn't put it down, and I thought it was fun, and I think it will probably make a really good series or movie, you know, I think in the grand scheme of all of his work, it's not his best, but it's really, really
good.
Seems
like he's got a lot more to do. He's a young guy.
Yeah.
He's working fast. Well, you know, I think one of the reasons we were critical is because Scream brought criticism into the conversation about these movies.
Right.
So, like, you can't... This is a post-Scream world, whether you like it or not.
Right.
So it's like you can't not be critical of the meta-ness of it.
Right. Right, exactly. It really is, and that's why Scream is just so fascinating, because when you look at like horror movies or slasher movies more specifically as like a genre, there is the pre-Scream era and the post-Scream era, and it's really there. It's a huge shift.
Yes, absolutely.
And what makes it so interesting is I often forget that like it's directed by Wes Craven, who was one of the old guard directors.
Right, and also before Scream, he did Wes Craven's New Nightmare,
which a lot of people say
like is the beginning of the Scream thing.
Yeah, and that's an underrated movie.
Yes, yes. And if you guys want to hear us talk more about Scream, me and Anthony did an episode of PCMC on the Scream series 1 to 4, the ones that are available now. We didn't talk about the show.
I always forget that show exists.
Yeah, you don't have. Yeah, it's fine. All right. Thank you for talking to me about this. This was good.
Thank you. I had a fun time.
This is PCMC. We come out every Wednesday. We end every episode by saying,
go bye-bye.